Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Squadcast. My name is Jeepo, and as always I'll be joined by Disposable Hero. This show is where we sit down with OWI and discuss all things Squad. So on today's show, we'll be joined by none other than Merlin, CEO of OWI, and Drav, project leader for Squad. So without any more preamble, let's jump right in. Alrighty, welcome everyone to another iteration of the Tactical Gamer Squad podcast. And today, apart from myself, Jeepo, and the glorious game officer, Disposable Hero, we also have Drav and Merlin, both from OWI. I'll let everyone say hello here.
Hey!
Hi, guys.
Excellent, thank you. So, like I say, we have two of the OWI devs with us today. And what we're going to do is we're going to keep this podcast pretty short, try to keep it under an hour. We're going to give it over to Drav and Merlin and have them introduce themselves properly. They're not really the most vocal guys in the team, so I'll let them say hello.
I am Drav, I'm the project lead on Squad. Been doing it since last year. I started beginning of last year, and yeah, my job is pretty much getting things done, getting everyone talking to each other, and getting the game out and getting everyone along. The second half of that is keeping everyone happy, making sure people don't fall out. It is actually a job rather than just a modding as opposed to Project Reality. And yeah, so that's my job, is keeping everyone happy, trying to build a better team and getting the game done, basically. I used to be a 3D artist before that. I was an environment artist. I was an environment artist on Project Reality as well, and like a prop and vehicle artist to start with. I started off making all the crates from PR and things like that.
And I am Merlin Will. I am the creator of Squad, and right now serving as, I guess, sort of the studio director or CEO, in a sense. And day to day, I mostly think about the big picture at OWI, think about the business, the finances, what we're doing almost on the above the project level when it comes to things like how Squad and PostScriptum work together, how our technology works, and, you know, where we're heading in the next, know, whether it be 1 year or 5 years, it's what I spend a lot of my day thinking about. And background wise, I came from PR originally as a programmer. I mean, when I first started working on PR, I didn't even know how to open a zip file or anything like that. But eventually I ended up making the mortars, the UAV in PR, and a lot of the helicopter and whatnot weapon systems. And then, yeah, I eventually went on to get an actual formal computer science degree because of my work on PR, and used that training to help start out Squad initially.
So, well, welcome, guys. I think what we're going to do is we're going to kind of...
Oh, before you carry on,
go ahead.
We all used to play on the tactical server game of loads on PR as well.
That's not a prerequisite, but...
No, it's not. But it's nice to hear. Speaking of PR, and we thought we'd kind of dig back into the past a little bit here before we get into what's going on with the Squad currently. So I know you guys both in your introductions kind of touched a little bit on some of your prior history with the predecessor to Squad, which is Project Reality. And so it's kind of interesting to find out where the roots of this game that we're all playing now, where it started and came from, and your involvement with it. So, I don't know, Drav, you were a 3DRs with PR. When did you start on PR, and how did you get to be involved with it in the first place?
I can't actually remember exactly. It was definitely around 0.5. I think I was like 0.5 till about 9.5, something like that. Maybe not, maybe like 9.7, I think, or 0.97. And I started out, I'd always played Quake and stuff before that, and I'd always been interested in modeling and texturing. Modeling was way too hard back then. I made absolutely terrible skins for Quake, so I knew how models and textures worked, but I didn't really know how to do any of it beyond like basic Photoshop. And then I think I started out, I wanted to make a tug, I wanted to make a, an Eryx thing for mod for on PR. Started messing about with that, and then someone else was like, actually, do you want to help us? You know, do you want to make some ammo crates? And so I think I started out texturing ammo crates. And I told them that it would be really easily, obviously, be easy. And then I spent 2 weeks trying as hard as I could to do it. And then eventually got a good result. It took ages. And then just carried on doing it from there, really. Then started doing the ammo crates, the supply crates, and then modeling and texturing slowly rather than just texturing. And then I think I did the BTR-60, the BTR-80, and maybe a couple of other bits and pieces as well. But I mean, real like amateur learning stuff on PR as I go. I learned to model through working on PR, model and texture.
But let's be real here. This is PR, the crate work. Very, very critical. Very
Yeah, that's touching a nerve with people, the whole crate thing. But we'll get into that later. Nice. So then do you have any form? Did you go on then like Merlin did, go on to schooling then afterwards? Or did you just continue PR and squad?
Never went to school. I lived in a warehouse for free, converting old abandoned buildings into trendy artist depots in London. I got to live there free, so I could just, in my spare time, do as much 3D as I could. Ended up getting a job at Gameloft as a vehicle artist working on the asphalt racing games, I think, probably 5 years ago now. Did a couple of years there and then quit just because I wanted to do nothing. And then old guys from PR, I think Mother Deer and Will, were like, hey, do you want to work on this new game we're doing? I was like, all right, I'll have a go. And then quitting to do nothing, I've now been busy ever since.
So they did the old we're getting the band back together routine with you, right?
Exactly. Yeah, one last gig. Do nothing.
One last ride. All right, Merlin. Same question to you, because you said you started out, you know how to open up a zip file, and you got yourself somehow talked into being a developer on PR. So why don't you go ahead and cover
some
of that.
Yeah, that was quite the journey. Originally, so this is thinking way back when, and I actually definitely joined on a lot later than a lot of the older PR guys. I was first playing PR like really, really seriously, maybe around 0.85, and then I didn't become a developer until about the 0.9, 0.95 time, which it's funny thinking back now, that's still quite a long time ago, but I was in high school at the time, and I actually started out on a mod for a mod. I started out on Combined Arms, which was at the time a mod for Project Reality, which is a mod for Battlefield 2. So originally I saw videos of this mini mod, Combined Arms, where they had like radar and PR and all sorts of like weird weapon systems and aircraft carriers and all that kind of stuff. And I thought that was really cool. It sort of, I guess, turned my gears, so to speak. So I originally just volunteered. I was like, you know, how can I help you guys? And back then I actually started as a mapper. Like I started out just placing very simple assets, like finding ways to tweak PR maps and add new things to them. And then over time, because that mini mod project didn't really have somebody who packaged the game or shipped it out to people, that kind of stuff, I started learning all sorts of stuff about project management, installers, how Battlefield 2 is structured, and you know how to, I guess, do anything that you need to do when you're trying to go crazy with it. But that ended up teaching me a lot of the skills that I ended up needing for PR. The first big project I had on PR was the mortars. That was something where it was, I don't remember, it was either James or DB or someone like that. Basically, they had the mortar model done, but no one ever had spent the time to code it up. So, you know, I was at the time just a high school kid with a lot of time on my hands. So I was like, yeah, I'll try it. And that was a pretty big learning experience for me. And I think it was a cool feeling working on something that at the time was going into like something that I really, really loved, PR back then. And then things kind of snowballed from there. I spent a lot of time working in a lot of different areas in PR. I think I like to just be working on a bunch of projects. I spent time working on a revamp of the ammo system. If you guys remember, like back at the time, we switched to like being able to carry ammo bags around to different deployables and almost having a new added layer of the logistics system beyond just the crates. Mm-hmm. I spent time upgrading the weapon systems, having like point-to-click missiles and things like that and helicopters. Spent time with basically building the new UAV system that PR had alongside a DB. Spent time working on the thermal imaging. Spent time, the biggest project that I got involved with, and I can't even say that I did the bulk of the work. A lot of this was a incredible Russian coder, Tima, but the 100 and 256 like player tests and that kind of stuff, I was really excited about that kind of stuff. Helped out however I could, built a small test client that would let us like test ramping up a whole bunch of clients onto a single server. But yeah, that was sort of my background in PR. I guess the best way I could describe it was doing work in a lot of different areas.
It's cool hearing that. I mean, our background, obviously, myself and this, but I think we both joined around PR 0.5, maybe.
Yeah.
I know I did. And so I remember all those changes. So now we can blame you when they went wrong and credit you guys when they went right, right?
Oh, no, I was going to say that Merlin sounds like he's responsible for some of my favorite things that came about in PR, basically. So, good stuff out of that. So that's pretty cool. So then you went on to school then, Merlin, right?
Yeah, and I was actually at school for a portion of that as well. Like my time on Combined Arms was high school, and then while I was going to school, I was doing a lot of that work for PR. But yeah, then I started to actually, like my junior year started to actually get formal training in software, and actually took a break from all kinds of stuff like that to just go work as a regular software engineer for a year. But then it was sort of the band coming back together moment. I remember it was originally... The start of Squad was the result of a late night conversation. I don't even remember exactly who was there. I think it would have probably been myself, Gavin Ride, I should say Ancient Man, Iron Taxi. And we talked about, you know, I guess PR2 quite a bit. And I don't want to dive too much into that because I know it's there's a lot of history to that subject. But I think we wanted to sort of take a lot of the very core guys who had originally worked on PR Battlefield 2 and, you know, see who was interested in really getting a commercial project going and a very serious, like, pour a lot of hours into it project going. At the time, I had a lot of free time opening up, and we wanted to, you know, commit to doing something that was serious, doing something that would have, like, a Kickstarter, focus on building a prototype as quickly as possible. And I think the one thing that we really focused on that had never really happened much at any of the efforts before that to make a real game out of PR was focusing on something, making something that we could play, like something where we could actually go in there, play a round of AAS, drop rally points, have tickets on each side, have VoIP and be able to talk to each other. Like, we had never really thought about just rushing to make something playable. And I think that was sort of the secret sauce that I think really got Squad off the ground originally.
Yeah, you had like a list of things that you sort of knew straight away that needed to be in there, right? I mean, I remember playing a very, very early pre-current alpha version of Squad when you guys were still using the Skype group to distribute the installer and jump on. Yeah. I think it was Logar with you guys, and I was like, damn, this has come out of nowhere and you've got like all the basics already in here. It was because you did, right? You had all those things that you knew you needed straight up.
Yeah, it was really just squad system, VoIP, AAS and tickets, teams and squads. It's really not that complicated when you boil it down to the bare essentials that you need to have an actual functional round of PR or squad.
Cool. So that was how you guys got started. So the team now at OWI, you're getting big now. How many people you got rolling there?
Altogether, the last I checked on paid people, and there's a mix of, you know, like some part timers, support, QA, but almost 50 people now who are paid in some way by OWI.
Wow.
I would say the development team as a core is probably close 30 or 35.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate.
There's a lot of part-time people on there. So 50 sounds like a lot, but I think I would say there's still only a core development team, about 35. Yeah, about that.
who are like actually paid full time, like spend all of their time working on the squad kind of people.
It's impressive. It's impressive when you consider, you know, the background of coming from a mod, like you guys have just explained. It's huge. All right, cool. So there's a lot of talking points we could probably touch on there. We could touch on your crates draft. We could touch on Merlin, your helicopters. I know there'd be a lot of people interested in hearing some more about that. Why don't we touch on a little bit of some of the actual changes that you guys are hoping to make now going forward? So everyone knows the V10's come out. It's been awesome. And we'll talk a little bit more about V10. But just the vision now that you guys have for squad going forward, let's ask you some questions about that. So,
well, I can say first of all, crates are still up in the air. I'd love to put crates in, but we're still not. I think crates will really be decided once we helicopters are the real decider for crates, because how do you distribute supplies? You either have to have helicopters land and sit there for a bit, or you can have a helicopter land and drop out crates. Yeah, I mean, so that's the real design.
Right. Yeah, that's a whole talk about logistics and how that all works, getting into that. But V10, Jeepo touched on.
Logistics is a tiny part. Let's go on to the big stuff. It was just an example.
Right. Well, Jeepo touched on the V10 thing. So V10 just came out, what's it been, like 3 weeks? Groans. It just works out that way that it actually kind of has been. But so, you know, you guys are just coming down off of that. And so you probably had some time to spend a little bit of a retrospective on it and what's gone on. And so I don't know if you guys want to talk a little bit about some of the trials and tribulations of V10, sort of the journey to get there from V9. And maybe some of the things that you learned along the way that you might be able to go ahead and apply going forward as you
User
march on towards V11. And we lost Draft for a minute, but I'm sure he'll be back.
Yeah, I can answer this one. There are a lot of things we learned over the course of getting V10 out the door. That I can say without a doubt. I think there's a few big picture messages that we learned. One thing that kind of strikes me right off the bat is the fact that, and I think a lot of people in the community do point this out. For one, we learned a lot about versioning and expectations when it comes to when you ship releases. Because I think in many ways there were like two major releases mixed in there. But we had tied so much
User
stuff into the
channel.
Number V10 that we had to stick with that as sort of, yeah, this is when the animation system is coming out and it will be in V10. But I think in many ways, V10 is actually more like V12. And I think there was a V10 and a V11 in there where we added things like the mortars and modding and added a huge performance boost in there. Like there was a lot of stuff that were actually quite serious changes. And moving forward, I think that's one of the takeaways from V10 for us is to be a little bit more careful about what do we consider a release and how do we frame it to the community. To make it clear that, you know, we have been delivering content along the way for sure. And then I think another big picture lesson for us, though, is to be careful about tying down technology to a specific release. Because I think for many of the technology sides of developing V10, there was just it takes a long time to get a system like an animation system done right. And it's the kind of thing where had we structured it a little bit differently, we probably could have gotten some other things done along the way or, you know, rethought like having to have a lot of pressure there to get it out the door quickly and, you know, do other things meanwhile. But I think going forward, we're going to be more careful about when there's like a big system that we want to rewrite or some sort of major engineering or technology task that we want to do, not committing it to a specific release, but rather developing the system in a different branch. And this is actually the way Epic works internally. And a lot of game studios that make engines work is developing that technology isolation and in a different branch and then bringing it in when it's ready. So that way the main development of the game isn't blocked and we can still be putting out art and content and other things without having to have the whole worry of how is it going to intermix with the technology that's being developed.
Trav, do you have anything you want to add to that?
What I would say, the animation system was extremely like all encompassing. So it was very difficult to actually compartmentalize it and say, hey, we're just going to do this bit this time and that won't roadblock us on this. And I mean, it's essentially rewriting the whole infantry part of the game and all the weapons. And so there came a point where like we had content ready to go, but the animator would have to animate it, rig it, import it, put it in, only to then have to do it immediately again to put it in A10. So the last sort of third of last year was basically just like everything we're doing now is just going to go into A10, and we're just going to have to wait, and we're just going to have to put things in A10, and we're going to have to suck it up. And that was why you saw a lot of the wait for the last sort of third of the year. After the Narva release, I think we upgraded to 4.16, and then we really had a decent long wait, and we were as frustrated as everyone else is because it just takes time to do. But that's the challenge, was pretty much redoing the whole of the infantry part of the game.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and it definitely explains that. And it just, things take time, and that's just the way that it goes. So, but it sounds like you guys learned some good lessons out of that. So that's good. And so then,
interesting. On that note, someone had a chat, I think, with a dice engineer in Vancouver a while ago or the other day, and they were like, what's your worst thing working on Frostbite? And he's like, the animation system is horrendous. Every time we touch it, it breaks, that kind of stuff. So
that's
not
interesting
just
to know.
And I would say as well that an animation system is complicated for something like Assassin's Creed, but to get things working in multiplayer is 10 times more complicated. I think we had a pretty much working version in local really early on, and then actually to get the whole thing working in multiplayer and have all the movement prediction and have everything look smooth, it's really complicated. And it's so easy that once it's done, you forget about that.
Right. Correct. Yeah. The systems look easy to the people looking at the end point of it, but the internal side of it is a lot more complicated and much more going on underneath than that. So. But is now going forward, though, now that the animation system is out of the way, so you guys are kind of then on your sprint towards leaving early access, I would imagine, then. And a sprint is sort of a relative term.
Yeah, we're basically
a series of sprints.
It's a big focus for us now.
I mean, because there's not really... Okay, so there's core inventory, which is... partially put in. I'm not sure where that stands, and maybe you can't talk about that.
No. I could explain core inventory was supposed to be alongside the animation system, so it basically would free up a lot of our inventory work to make it a lot more flexible. So we could have, we could have a soldier rather than having a bunch of assigned things to his kit. That could be chosen rather than have everything packaged together in a kit. Part of it was sort of to make the animation system work better. And what we realized fairly early on is that the core inventory would be a whole another heap of work for actually not much gain. So what we've done for the animation system is improve the inventory that we have for what we absolutely need to. And then we're going to do another pass on it this year. Not immediately, but within the next 6 months, we're going to do another pass on that. Now, whether that'll actually be released in 6 months, I don't know. But that's to then some things again. I can give you an example of it. So at the moment, weapons can only have one. They can only contain one ammunition, basically. So if you notice now, you have to swap weapons if you want to have armor piercing or if you want to have HE. Whereas the actual gun should be able to contain both, and you can switch. We want to be able to do things. So that's an animation. That's an inventory change. So we'll do things like that. We might make some more changes, but we're probably not going to do the overarching America. You could make any game with it because it's just not practical in the timeline.
Okay, that makes sense. So. then going forward, Jeepo, did you have any questions you want to ask before I steal all the time?
No, you keep rolling.
Okay. So going forward then, after V10, is there anything out of V10 that, well, I guess that's probably not a fair question to ask about whether there's anything you'd like to maybe do a little differently now that it's out, because you have the option of changing it going forward. So I guess let's talk about the future of Squad. And what we have to look forward to down the line without any timelines or anything added to it. But Merlin, you talked about adding weapon systems to helicopters, and I know that the helicopter system is something that everybody's looking forward to. There's already a mod out there that includes helicopters in it that's been popular, that people have enjoyed playing. And sort of wanted to have it included into the core game system as it is now, but I think you have something a little bit more, I don't know about complex isn't the right word, but deep or rich probably than what the current helicopter mod is.
Well, I would say more polished and I guess engineered is probably the better way to say it. But I think I can also speak to the bigger topic here, and I don't want to shy away from it too much because I think it actually is a good topic. Not just, you know, what specific things, but also the big picture of now that we're out of V10, kind of where are we at? And I think the best thing to keep in mind, for one, is that V11 will not be 12 months from now. Like, I think now that A10 is done and out there, there's definitely is going to be a change to the cadence and to the way releases are coming out. And that's both because it's, for one, what Dave was speaking to earlier, that the animation system is a rather unique and big system that had to go out in like a big chunk and did hold up a lot of other stuff while it was going on. So I think that's going to be happening less in the future for sure. And I would even go as far as to say it's very likely the case that we'll have a much more regular cadence to our releases. And, you know, it's you're going to see some big releases come out on the order of months rather than a year. And I think the details of that are really where, you know, we don't want to lock into anything too much, but it's really a question of which specific features are going to come out when. And there's certainly some things that we know we have planned, things like helicopters and tanks. They're for sure planned. It's really a question of when. And I think there's also on the higher level, there's plenty of thinking that we're going to be giving to game design, to the big picture of, you know, what maybe even rethinking some systems, like our spawn system is certainly on the table. There might be some aspects of rally points, let's say, or who knows what it might be specifically, because this stuff is still like very much in the planning and development stage. But, you know, it could also be the medic system being reevaluated. We basically haven't touched any substantial portion of the medic system in years now. And I think it's a great example of where we've been holding off on some of these design tasks to see the impact that A10 has had. But I think a number of those design tasks are going to be back on the table now that A10 is out the door.
Okay.
And I think to add on to that, the reason we just sucked it up and spent the time we needed to do on A10 was so we could actually free up everyone now to work on the next, you know, the next jump. And to carry on from what Will said a little bit more, certainly the focus, so you can almost cut it down into two separate categories. One is basically getting features in, and that would be things like systems. Like what do we need to add to the game to make it better? What features do we need to add to the game to make it better? And that's things like adding tanks, adding IFVs, expanding the vehicle damage system, adding helicopters. The really big stuff that basically changes the game in a drastic way, because you go from a game with infantry and light vehicles to full-blown armored vehicles. I mean, that's a big change. Having helicopters in really changes the game. I was talking to a bunch of ex-PR guys the other day. Having that base from PR was actually, from Battlefield 2, was such a great base to work on, because we had that stuff from the start already. And a lot of it was well engineered and well designed from the outgo. So we got to act on top of that. So what we're trying to do now on that side is design those well-engineered features and stick them in the game now, so they go in and they're good from the start. The other side of what Will's just been talking about is looking at the game, rather than trying to like design brand new features to make things better, is let's look at what we've got, but could we be using it in a better way? Could we be, so it's almost like rebalancing things to actually make things like squad leaders a lot better, a lot more useful. What small tools could give to squad leaders to make them have a better time, to make them communicate better, to make squads stick together, to make people get lifts. And a lot of that is actually just fairly small user experience stuff as well. Like, I know a big problem that's been highlighted recently is that you look on your map and you can't, you see a vehicle driving past, but you don't know what squad it's from. So you can't talk to that squad because you don't know which squad it is. Small things like that, rebalancing things and actually just reassessing what we've got already and maybe redesigning it slightly better so it works better.
That's all music to our ears, because there's a lot of things you just touched on that are pain points to definitely ease the burden on everyone so that team play is a lot better. And some of what you talked about too is kind of interesting, because it's I know that with PR there was always a big discussion about coding player behavior and the changes that you could make to the game a little bit to sort of influence player behavior a little bit. So some of this stuff is good to hear about. I know that everybody worries about people not valuing their lives, people trying to be able to communicate, work together, and there seems like at times that there's barriers to it within the game now that could be added to make it easier to facilitate teamwork. Not only in organized play, but also just on just regular everyday play, to try and let everybody have that same type of experience. So that's all good stuff to hear.
And I think it's part of its team as well. I mean, you need a good team in order to make a good game or to make good systems even. And part of this last year and into this year is actually trying where we can to level up the team. So the guy that did the main menu for us is a guy called Ren. Really, really like good, talented blueprint programmer, I guess you call it. And he is now available to do some of these things for us. And actually, we have the mental capacity for it, and we have enough people to like help him get what's needed. So that's a big part of it as well. It's like you need a team to be able to do that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, so I'm glad that you touched on the squad leader stuff, and because really what drives, at least in our opinion, what drives people's experience in the game is the quality of the squad leader. And anything that you can add to improve the ability of the squad leader to lead a squad and communicate with the people in a squad and improve the cohesiveness would be a good add to the game, I think, because the squad leader, those are the guys that drive everyone's experience, whether you have a good round or a bad round, and whether you enjoy the game, or if you get unlucky enough to get stuck with bad squad leaders often enough, maybe you don't even play it anymore. I don't know, but
I think a lot of us even see the really shit rounds or shit squad leaders or some of the bad experiences that there are to be had, because you guys, I'm sure, play a lot with people that you know already. We play a lot with people we know already, and I think that makes it, you don't see. I think I play sometimes randomly on the free weekends, and I'll join a squad, or I'll just try and squad lead something, and that's when you really get to see, like, where the problems are a lot.
Yeah.
Because it's very frustrating sometimes.
It can be a mixed bag, but the consensus, I guess, is, as Dispo has mentioned, sort of squad leader quality of life changes will make a huge difference. And the conversation is, how do you influence positive changes just in your squad? Because if you get your squad playing well, that's some guys that are going to enjoy it. And then that, you can percolate that up where a squad leader can start to talk to other squad leaders. And next thing you know, that entire team's having a good time. So yeah, we see that particularly, you mentioned free weekends, things like that. There's obviously a bit more of a challenge, let's say. helps mitigate that challenge if you've got active admins and you know, a server that's well placed, maybe sometimes on the free weekends. But we haven't had too much. I mean, let me speak for ourselves. We haven't had too much of an issue. We've been doing whitelisted password nights every week now as well to try and bring the standard of play up, and to bring new people into, you know, a different type of play than you might see on some other, you know, just random servers if you just jump on your own. Like you said, we've been playing as a group for too long. I might show my age if I say how long we've been playing together. So that definitely changes it a little bit.
But, and I think this is something that, like, free weekend guys or people new to the game, they've obviously looked at the game and be like, I'm interested in that because they want some teamwork and some communication. So one of the interesting things I found is that if you do jump in, if you people talking to each other, if you can get in a vehicle and get to the action and get down the rally point or build fire bases and things like that, once that happens and people do start talking and working together, suddenly you've got a great unit and people will be like, fuck, I don't know what I'm doing, I'll just follow this guy, this is working.
Absolutely.
So it's there, it's just a bit difficult at the minute.
No, you're absolutely right. And actually, one of the things we've noticed ourselves doing these some of these events that we've been hosting is you can't judge a person based on how many hours they've played in the game. It just doesn't seem to work. Like, you can have people who come from a background of, you know, you mentioned PR and games like that, but we've got people who come from all sorts of different backgrounds who, you know, 10 hours in, they're one of the better squad leaders you'll see, probably better squad leader than me, and I've got way many hours. So, you know, it's giving them the tools to do that, I think, is vital, and that's definitely where you guys are going. So
yeah, and just finish that off, I think, I mean, I don't think it's a question of just adding like A10 strikes to all squad leaders. I think that's not going to be the you know, the be all and end all answer. It's like,
no.
Oh, I have the tools I need. It's really a lot of small changes or small tweaks, often to like current systems that we have, to just make them work a bit better. I can give you an example of one that was mentioned the other day, and that is to have in the 3D world is to have a little icon above the squad leader so you can find him. So like a guy who's not played very much before can just be like, oh yeah, that's the guy I'm supposed to follow. Even if nothing else happens, that you can look around and be like, who's my squad leader? Oh yeah, it's him. And then you can follow him anywhere. I think that alone is not going to make hardly any difference at all, but it's a little step in the right direction. If you can just be like, yeah, that's my guy right there, I'll follow him. It's a small step in the right direction. Now add like 10 of those kind of things and suddenly you're getting somewhere.
Yes. Agreed. 100%. Okay, so can I totally change gears on this and ask you a different question? A little bit more recent topic is the Sweet FX and the blur issues and the removal of I think it was Sweet FX, or am I remember calling it something else?
Reshade
issue. Yeah. So, do you guys have any? I know it's I keep seeing it come up over and over and over again, and we hear it a lot from people too, that the game is just blurry to them. And I know part of it is the engine and whatnot. Do you guys have any kind of an idea of... I can't put you down on a timeline, but is that going to be addressed in the future, near or far?
You want me to answer this, Will?
Yeah. I would like you to answer it, since I know zero about lighting and that kind of stuff.
All right. Yes, actually, you know what? I think we haven't actually put it on now. It's not scheduled at the minute, but I think it is something that we do need to look into. So as a brief example, well, as a brief like explanation, UE4 you can basically do anything with. So UE4 is a very open-ended thing. They've included a bunch of anti-aliasing things out of the box, but they're not very good, basically. So we added some more. I think we added SMAA a while ago, which is actually a third party thing written by someone else and then actually given to us. I think he did it for something else and then gave it to us. And that definitely made some improvements. But in general, we don't have a good anti-aliasing solution. I think PUBG is the same. I don't know whether they then put more resources into it and found one, but I still see blurry complaints about PUBG as well. What we need to do is spend a bunch of time looking into anti-aliasing. There are some good ones out there, I think, or I certainly see some demonstrations of good ones, but we need to actually spend the time to do it.
And
that's really modifying the engine on. It's quite a difficult task. We would like to do it. I'd like to. Yeah, I think we should probably dedicate some resources to doing it, because I agree, it is blurrier than we want it. Some of the anti-aliasing solutions are better than others, but what we really need to do is take a look at that whole lot again and like get rid of the ones that are just bad for everyone, and keep the ones that aren't, and then look at some new ones as well.
And I think one thing that can confuse the issue a little bit here is that I think there really are two problems that we're trying to grapple with, and sometimes people can mix them up a bit, but it's really the anti-aliasing, and then on top of that, the actual lighting itself and the contrast and all sorts of stuff like that, like how vibrant the game is or what the lighting style of the game is. And I think that's where the whole reshade thing comes in quite a lot, not just in the, you know, the anti-aliasing or the specific detail level of what the game looks like, but the actual colors of the game and how the lighting looks is another thing that I think is a lot more practical for us to address on a reasonable timeline than, you know, coming up with an entire anti-aliasing solution or pipeline. And I think that is something that we're addressing separately and we are looking very seriously into.
Well, relighting is definitely on the cards. That's scheduled, and you should see the results of that fairly soon. That's definitely on the cards. There's a new tone mapper in UE4 as well that we haven't been using so far, because it slightly adjusts how everything looks, and we basically have to relight the maps. So that's getting switched on, and we're going to start relighting some of the maps as we go. So that we can definitely make more of a change with. And I think we have the tools and, like, again, the talent and some capable guys who actually can level that up a bit. The anti-aliasing, well, reshade is partly colouring and then partly sharpening as well. The anti-aliasing thing is another one, and we'll have to have a look at that as well, but that is significantly more complicated.
And it will be interesting, to be honest, to see, like, how much it relieves the pressure from it, because it's really hard to gauge how much of the feedback that we get is really people talking about the lighting versus people who actually have an issue with the anti-aliasing or the much deeper level aspects of Unreal Engine. So I guess we'll find out when we start getting those lighting changes shipped.
Yeah, that'll be what does it. You speak a little bit about mapping there. It sort of allows us to segue in. I know Chance and a couple of the other guys have been building out maps and mods, have been doing some good streams on Twitch recently. I've been watching a few of those. So what maps that are upcoming are you guys most excited for that you can talk about?
Fallujah.
But you, Merlin? You all in on
Fallujah? Yeah,
train?
Definitely Fallujah. But honestly, I'm most excited or eager to try and see even some more community maps at some point. I'd love to see people in the community step up and produce, because honestly, you think about it, like our most popular map right now, or I think many people consider our most popular map, was a community map. But there's also, and I don't want to, you know, steal the thunder or ruin the surprise of it, but there's also maps being planned along the way, and, you know, plenty of stuff that's going to be coming up in the coming months. But I'm definitely pretty excited for some of those new maps.
Yeah, likewise.
There's a desert map that I don't know if it's been announced yet, but that should be pretty exciting when it comes out, particularly in association with armored vehicles or something like that on it as well. That's something we really haven't seen anything of yet in Squad. I mean, we had Kashan was always either hated or loved in PR. That's something we've something similar to that, I think, is coming.
Squad Kashan, the leaks are real.
That's pretty exciting. But yeah, really, for me, Fallujah, because I know that the art team and the mapping team are both like really trying hard to actually
level up stuff for that. We've made a ton of new assets, I think almost everything will be new on it. I think it will be stuff that you haven't seen before from other maps, that kind of thing. So we're taking a lot of the feedback from old stuff and actually trying to apply it to a new, like, just to level up the art there. I can't say whether we'll succeed or not, but we're certainly trying.
Well, we're looking forward to and dreading Fallujah both at the same time.
Yeah, I think the one that I saw on your forums this week, actually, that I'm dreading but absolutely looking forward to is the Korangal Valley remake. That scares me on every level. I remember some nightmarish scenarios on that one. Although it's a 4K map now,
stuck on the side of a hill, out of stamina, getting shot.
Yeah, yeah. There's a video somebody linked in your forums actually when they were talking about suppression, and it's from Korangal, and it almost gave me PTSD just looking at it. It was horrendous.
I think we literally just triggered about 90% of the PR players who are going to listen to this.
They'll be okay.
Well, I mean, the really cool thing about that is that's the original guy that made the PR map, isn't it?
Code Red.
So I mean, that's really cool. And we'd definitely like to support him in any way we can, because I think that's really cool that he's coming back and actually making another one.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not having to stick within the limitations of the BF2 Python build. So he's free to make what he wants, essentially. And that was a map, I know we touched on helicopters really briefly, but that was a map where if you didn't have a helicopter, you didn't move as a US team. You know, it was your entire logistics almost was little birds and getting stuff up in the top of these mountains. So that one will be really fun to watch.
Yeah. So community maps, you talked about those. There are some other really good community maps out there. So I guess I don't know that you can answer this or not, but I'm going to ask anyway. And there's Forest Air, and there's some other really excellent community maps that are out there that, you know, might need a little bit more spit and polish to be put into the game, but is there any community maps that have been out there that we could possibly look forward to seeing in the package game in the near future?
I can't answer that really. That's really Chris's bag. That's Iontax's bag. He knows that better than anyone else.
Answer is probably erring on the side of no. Like there's still projects that they have a lot of potential, but nothing that's like anywhere near ready to go in.
Okay. Well,
I would love to see Korangal in some form. I think it's a little way off yet. I think it was the last update I saw, but yeah, I would love to see something like that come in.
I'm just excited for the French forces, but I'll have to explain my logic there because French forces seem to be coming on leaps and bounds every wrench, which looks fantastic. And you guys have got the Brits that you keep showcasing. They're really far along as well. I just want the French versus the Brits. So that's what I want to put on some maps. It's a bit of a different one.
You're gonna fight in a castle.
We can redo Waterloo and Belgium.
Right. yeah, I mean, so that's a little bit of the modding scene. What else have we got, Dispo, to crack you guys on here?
Well, I wanted to touch on crates some more, but I think that Draft pretty much answered that question, so I'm not going to go into that. So, I mean, the other big question is, what's the overall plan for getting out of early access? Is that something to look forward to in 2018? Do you think you're another year away? Without pinning you down to any particular date, it'd just be a gut feeling right now. But I guess people want to know, how far away are you from being at least to the 1.0 stage?
I'm comfortable saying this without pinning us to a specific date, and I'm not promising this, but we are trying to get out of early access this year.
Okay, so something to look forward to in 2018 then, hopefully, right?
And I think we're not working towards a date as such. What we are working, well, except 2018. I really would like to be out of early access in 2018. But what we're really thinking is we're actually putting it down to like a list of features. But when we're done with those, we can say that, you know what, this is a pretty solid game now. And I mean, at the moment, what we're looking at internally is would be tanks, helicopters, 100 players. That's certainly the feature list we're working towards, and everything associated with that, right? I mean, you can't have tanks without something else to kill them. So, you know, I think we've tow missiles, that all the associated stuff with that.
Sure.
That's certainly what we're working towards, is those big ticket items. That's what we really need to, so we can say, you know what, on a bird's eye view, look what this game's got. And I think, but all of those things make a really big difference to players as well.
And I think there's some important details there that go along with that. The first is that those certainly aren't going to be the only things that come out along the way. Like there's plenty of other stuff that we've got roadmapped and that we're thinking about. It's just a question of when, and you know, there might be something that we dive into and then we realize, whoa, we're getting way in over our heads and we want to save this for a little bit later. But I think the thing that we can say is that there will be more than just tanks, helicopters, and 100 players, as Dave is alluding to a little bit there. And then the second is that 1.0 is that exiting early access is also not the end of squad or the end of development. Like, there are going to be things that we want to get in that we actually save for after 1.0, more to get early access done and to finally be like, well, squad is a mature title and it is a complete product. But there's more that we want to add on. And it's maybe even akin to the way Battlefield did it with Battlefield 2. You know, you had your 1.1, your 1.2. I think there are things that we want to ship out the door after Squad is 1.0 or feature complete, so to speak.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, I mean, the title is not going to stagnate or anything. I'm pretty sure that everybody's glad to hear that. And with the modding community, I guess another question I could ask then about modding, because modding community would help continue the lifespan beyond the 1.0 as well. There's a very vibrant modding community within Squad right now, not only in mapping, but there's plenty of people getting together to, I know that recently the cinematic development part was, I don't want to say launched, but that seems to be taking off, where people are making the cinematic versions of Squad now and recording that, and also different game modes and stuff that people are developing, and running for either for their communities or whatever, and being tried out. So the overriding question that I see a lot of asked is that the visibility of those mods, and trying to make sure that people see and populate and play those mods in addition to just on the regular licensed servers. And there's been, I know within the community has been discussion about whether you integrate the modded servers into the licensed server list and whatnot. And Taxi talked about that a little bit with us last time too, and I think I pretty much understand your position on it. So I don't know if you guys want to reiterate that position or if you've maybe changed your position
a little bit. Yeah, I think we definitely can. And obviously the heavy disclaimer before it, that a lot of this stuff we're still very actively thinking about. And actually, now that A10 is out the door, thinking of planning this stuff out so that we can have it in for, you know, the coming year is something that we're definitely spending time on. But I think the best motif when it comes to modding for everyone to keep in mind is probably finding a middle ground or striking a balance. Because there's a whole bunch of different people, a whole bunch of different almost stakeholders, so to speak, when it comes to this. And we're trying to do our best to be neutral and find a good healthy balance of things. But it's really what you were just speaking to. It's things like, for one, making sure that there still is a core game that, you know, isn't completely fragmented like you see with Arma a lot of the time, where everyone just plays the mods and there isn't really a core experience. But at the same time, we also don't want to drown out mods or, you know, almost hamstring them to not be able to make the kinds of things that they want to make and be able to actually have people playing them. I think a great model for me that's serving as sort of a guidepost for going into our internal discussions about it is thinking about the way Battlefield 2 had like a very strong vanilla gameplay experience and also provided, you know, room for being able to customize each individual server and have some modifications internally to it. But also, you know, having these in a separate area, big mods that could be made, and, you know, you could have full conversion mods, or there were even small tweaks that were made to the game. And it's where, you know, maybe it's almost a little bit fitting, but like a lot of the other things that we do in the game, I really would like to try and find a good balance between what Battlefield had for modding and what Arma has now for modding. And it really comes down to that balance between the core experience still being there, albeit with a good amount of customization or moddability to that core experience where it's reasonable. But at the same time, being able to go out and have, you know, like whether it's a King of the Hill mod or a new Project Reality or a Forgotten Hope or anything like that. You know, if someone has a lot of passion and has a vision for what they want to build, we want people to be able to not just build it, but actually have people play it. Hopefully that's a good answer.
I think that's a good answer. I think that's a good answer. I think it gives the people that are spending their time making mods some encouragement, and hope that that you guys are actively looking at this and trying to find out the best solution that doesn't hurt the core game while still promoting the work that they've done and helping keep the community growing and alive. So that's good news.
David, do you have anything you wanted to add to that?
No, not really. I mean, just that I would say that for a bit of background information, there's quite a lot of difficulties involved with mods. I mean, so there's the great Unreal 4 marketplace where you can buy anything and put it in your game, like us included, right?
Sure.
We can buy a marketplace asset pack or something like that, put it in our game, and I think it'll cost a couple of $100s. And wicked, we can play with it and we can sell that game. What you really can't do is distribute that. So, for instance, if you've got a great forest pack or a city pack or whatever, you absolutely can't redistribute that in your SDK. So the only way, I mean, we looked into this as well, and the only real way to do it is to buy it outright from the marketplace guy, which is going to cost, I mean, $50,000, something like that, because they're going to lose all income from that once you put it in the SDK, because anyone else can just download it and rip it out. So there's quite a lot of complications involved. So a lot of the things we'd really like to do, we can't do. There's the whole question of licensing some stuff, like legal stuff. I think we're not just hamstrung by what we want to do as game developers. There's a lot of outside things to consider with modding as well.
Okay, and that's a good piece of information to keep in mind as well, too.
Absolutely. And I think I'm just looking at the watch. That's the top of the hour, guys. So we're just about out of time. Before I call it, is there anything else you guys would like to add or like to say about just about how things are or anything we can look forward to in the relatively near future, maybe? Is there any hints you can drop? I don't want to say leaks because that's such a strange term to use, I feel.
Fast ropes for 1.0.
Oh, we're gonna bring that meme back, are we?
But we'll see.
That's like a 15-year-old meme. How dare you, sir?
Still lives on. The one thing I definitely would want to say, I guess it's not really a leak, but just for anyone who's listening, like, thank you for hanging in there through the God knows year-long wait for the animation system. And I think we're doing the best that we can, and we're really working hard at a lot of this stuff. I think things will get better when it comes to progress on the game and to features that are coming out. I think 2018, quite frankly, I don't know for sure, but I think it'll be a great year for Squad and for OWI in general. So I would say just hang in there, and we're thank you for being a very dedicated member of the community and for sticking it out with us.
Excellent. Well, I think V10 showed a lot of people the direction the game's going in, and that's awesome. I think you're probably right. 2018 is going to be great. So yeah, thank you guys for building the game we've all been looking for way too long. And yeah, I mean, do you have any other questions before I let you guys hook?
No, I just want to thank Drav and Merlin for taking the time out of their workday to spend an hour with us talking about Squad, this game that everybody spends an awful lot of their free time playing. So that's pretty cool. And yeah, we appreciate your time and appreciate everyone's time listening. Hopefully somebody got something out of this, a little bit of information they didn't know before, and Jeep and I will work on putting together another one here in the near future. So Drav and Merlin, thanks for your time very much, guys. And we look forward to seeing you guys on the TG server with us again sometime in the near future, I hope. So with that, we will bid everyone adieu and have a great day. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. As we mentioned before, Tactical Gamer runs a password night every weekend, generally on Friday nights. If you're interested in coming to play with us in a whitelist server event, please visit our Discord server at www.discord.me/tacticalgamer. And once you're registered on the server, go ahead and type in help! help! And the tactical bot will go ahead and give you instructions on how to get whitelisted. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back again soon with another podcast featuring interviews with some more OWI staff. Thanks.